Fossil fuels are a uniquely cost-effective source of energy. Fossil fuels today are widely portrayed as one source of energy among many, one that is easily replaceable by alternatives, especially renewable solar and wind. But this portrayal completely contradicts reality. In reality, alternatives such as solar and wind have been fiercely trying to compete with fossil fuels for over 50 years. And yet fossil fuels still provide 80% of the world's energy, four times as much as every alternative combined, and are growing fast. Why are fossil fuels so dominant and growing fast? Because they are a uniquely cost-effective source of energy, meaning they can provide the most valuable, effective types of energy for the lowest cost for the most people. The cost-effectiveness of energy has four dimensions. 1. Affordability. How much money does it cost relative to how much money people have? 2. Reliability. To what extent can it be produced on demand, when needed, in as large a quantity as needed? 3. Versatility. How wide a variety of machines can it power? 4. Scalability. How many people can it produce energy for, and in how many places? Fossil fuels alone provide what I call ultra-cost-effective energy, energy that nails all four criteria of cost-effectiveness. Fossil fuel energy is 1. Low-cost, 2. On-demand, 3. Incredibly versatile, and 4. On a scale of billions of people in thousands of places. No other source of energy comes close. The basic reason, as I will elaborate on in Chapter 5, is that fossil fuels have remarkable natural attributes. They are naturally stored, naturally concentrated, naturally abundant energy that energy producers have spent generations figuring out how to harness cost-effectively. Solar and wind are currently nowhere close to fossil fuels. They provide just 3% of the world's energy, despite having been on the market for many decades, and despite governments worldwide aggressively subsidizing or mandating them. And that 3% is almost exclusively for electricity, which is less than 1/5 of the world's energy use. Solar and wind energy make almost no contribution to many crucial areas of energy that are dominated by fossil fuels, such as heavy-duty transportation and many forms of industrial process heat, generating very high levels of heat for such processes as making plastics and cement. Further, because the sun and the wind are intermittent, uncontrollable sources of energy, that 3% is totally dependent on reliable, controllable power plants around the world, mostly fossil fueled. Thus, solar panels, wind turbines, and long-distance power lines don't replace the costs of controllable electricity infrastructure, they add to it. Which is why, as I will elaborate in Chapter 6, the more solar and wind grids use, the more their electricity tends to cost. The unique cost-effectiveness of fossil fuels is reflected in the actions and plans of China, the nation arguably most concerned with cost-effective energy. While in the U.S., we are told that China is eating our lunch with solar and wind, the reality is that China's energy production is 85% fossil fueled. China is eating our lunch, not in using solar and wind, but in using fossil fuels, including electricity that is 64% coal, to produce the energy its growing economy requires. Note, unless otherwise specified, all energy data in this book will be 2019 data, as 2019 is the most recent data set available as of this writing that isn't skewed by the dramatic but temporary decrease in energy use connected to the COVID-19 pandemic. In 2020, when the COVID-19 pandemic lockdown depressed energy use, China still imported record amounts of oil, mined a 5-year high amount of coal, and added 38 gigawatts of coal, enough to generate half the amount of electricity Texas uses in a year. As of July 2021, China had 260 gigawatts worth of coal plants in development, enough to generate over 3 times the amount of electricity Texas uses in a year, with each coal plant designed to last 40-plus years. The unique cost-effectiveness of fossil fuels clearly needs to be considered when making energy policy. But instead of considering it, our knowledge systems disseminators and evaluators either ignore it, or more commonly, deny it with the frequent claims we hear that fossil fuels are being rapidly replaced by renewables. This is particularly egregious in light of the second undeniable yet ignored fact about energy. Cost-effective energy isn't merely a modest value, it is essential to human flourishing, human beings' ability to live long, healthy, fulfilling lives. Cost-effective energy is essential to human flourishing. In physics, we learn that energy is the capacity to do work. When we're talking about the kind of energy that fossil fuels provide, we're talking specifically about machine energy, the capacity of machines to do work. I find it clarifying to think of energy as machine food or machine calories. Just as human beings cannot function without sufficient food to power ourselves, machines, whether automobiles, iPhones, or steel furnaces, cannot function without sufficient food, energy. The essential value of energy in machines to human flourishing is that they amplify and expand our naturally meager productive ability, our ability to produce the material values we need to survive and flourish, from food to clothing to shelter to medical care to education. Amplify. Machines amplify our productive abilities by enabling us to produce far more value in less time. For example, a modern combine harvester can reap and thresh enough wheat to make 500,000 loaves of bread in a day, about 1,000 times what a highly capable human can. Expand. Machines also expand our productive abilities by producing types of value that no number of humans can produce without machines. For example, an incubator can produce a perfect environment for a premature baby in a way that no amount of manual labor can. An airplane can produce a form of high-speed, safe travel that no amount of manual labor can. The computing machines of the internet produce near-instantaneous and unlimited access to knowledge, making unprecedented educational opportunities accessible to billions, something no amount of manual labor can do. I like to call today's enormous use of machines to amplify and expand our productive abilities machine labor. Machine labor is clearly a major part of the reason why billions of people today live the longest, healthiest, most opportunity-filled lives in history. For example, in the U.S., the average person uses about 75 times more machine calories than food calories, which means we have, in effect, 75 machine laborers producing value for us 24/7. Today's enormous use of machine labor is only possible because today's machine food, energy, is so cost-effective. The more cost-effective energy production is, the more people can use machine labor in more ways. The less cost-effective energy production is, the less people are empowered by machine labor and therefore doomed to the poverty that results from leading manual labor lives. The fact that cost-effective energy is essential to human flourishing should be stressed by our knowledge system whenever we talk about energy policy, particularly whenever we are talking about eliminating uniquely cost-effective fossil fuel energy. But the massive benefits of cost-effective energy in general, and ultra-cost-effective fossil fuel energy in particular, are almost never discussed, while the negative side effects are always discussed. For example, take the discussion of fossil fuel use in China and India. China and India have been responsible for a great deal of the world's increasing fossil fuel use over the past several decades. In both countries, both coal and oil use increased by at least a factor of 5, producing the vast majority of their energy. While accounts of these countries' fossil fuel use tend to focus on the side effects, such as air pollution, there have been massive life-extending and life-enhancing benefits. Consider the fact that increasing energy use in China and India correlates with major increases in life expectancy and income. These correlations are not coincidental. The dramatic increase in the use of machine labor, such as in factories, made possible a dramatic increase in the productive ability of individuals in China and India, which made possible a dramatic increase in their standard of living. Individuals in China and India now live in places where machines produce enormous amounts of value on their behalf, amounts that would be completely unachievable with manual labor. Not only in China and India, but worldwide, hundreds of millions of individuals in industrializing countries have used fossil-fueled machine labor to be productive enough to enjoy their first light bulb, their first refrigerator, their first decent-paying job, their first year with clean drinking water or a full stomach. And yet our knowledge system's evaluations of China and its energy use are almost exclusively focused on the negative side effects of coal and oil, while the role of coal and oil in radically extending lives and increasing opportunity for literally billions of people is ignored. Our knowledge system's ignoring of the unique, massive benefits of ultra-cost-effective fossil fuel energy to human flourishing, while calling for the rapid elimination of fossil fuels, is an irrational and dangerous approach to evaluating fossil fuels. And it gets even worse in light of the next undeniable ignored fact about the benefits of fossil fuels. Billions of people are suffering and dying for lack of cost-effective energy. Here's a scary fact that we almost never hear. Over 3 billion people use almost no energy, including electricity. I call these people members of the unempowered world. As energy expert Robert Bryce has observed, the average person in the unempowered world uses less electricity than a typical American refrigerator. And almost 800 million people in the unempowered world are classified by the International Energy Agency as having no access to electricity, which, as we saw with the babies in the Gambia who died from the lack of an ultrasound machine or an incubator, is an early death sentence. And 2.4 billion people, mostly part of the unempowered world, use primarily wood and animal dung to cook and to heat their homes. About 1.5 billion people live in what I call the empowered world, which means they use at least one-third as much electricity as the average American. And almost 3 billion people are between unempowered and empowered, living in what I call the barely empowered world. A knowledge system rationally evaluating policy options would not discuss the idea of restricting, let alone eliminating, fossil fuel use without stressing that, one, fossil fuels are currently a uniquely cost-effective source of energy, two, cost-effective energy is essential to human flourishing, and three, billions of people are suffering and dying for lack of cost-effective energy. The fact that our knowledge system routinely calls for fossil fuel elimination while ignoring all three of these undeniable benefits suggests that this is one of those times in history where the knowledge system's expert evaluation involves an egregiously irrational method of evaluation, in this case, calling for the elimination of something while ignoring its massive life-or-death benefits. But could so many members of our knowledge system, from the New York Times to world leaders to scientific spokespeople to Apple, really be making such a crude error? Or is our knowledge system's expert moral case for eliminating fossil fuels, carefully considering the benefits of fossil fuels, but just failing to communicate its reasoning to the general public? To know which is the case, we need to look at the best versions of the moral case for eliminating fossil fuels. That is, those versions being made by today's leading experts. Do our designated experts really ignore the benefits of fossil fuels? One valuable lesson I have learned from philosophy is that when I'm considering an argument, I want to familiarize myself with the best version of that argument. So, as a deep believer in expert knowledge, who found that the supposedly expert moral case for eliminating fossil fuels, as he understood it, was making the egregious moral error of calling for the elimination of fossil fuels while ignoring their massive life-or-death benefits, I went directly to the source, the leading experts who make the moral case for eliminating fossil fuels. Specifically, I looked to what I call our leading designated experts. Designated experts are individuals and sometimes institutions, often but not always researchers in a particular field by background, whom a knowledge system designates and prominently features as public spokespeople for the best expert knowledge and evaluation on some issue. Designated experts are frequently quoted and consulted because they are considered the people who have synthesized the best research and can both explain it clearly to us, dissemination, and help us decide what to do with it, evaluation. As hybrid synthesizer, disseminator, evaluators, they embody the mainstream knowledge system at a given time on a given topic. And their work is the best place to look to understand whether our knowledge system's expert evaluation is employing rational methods or not. On the issue of what to do about fossil fuels, some of the longest-standing designated experts are the public representatives of the United Nations, which houses what is undoubtedly the most influential organization related to climate, the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, or IPCC. Paul Ehrlich, an ecologist long based at Stanford University, who has written and spoken for over 50 years on fossil fuels, authoring best-selling books, and winning what has been called the Nobel Prize of Environmentalism, the Crawford Prize. John Holdren, an ecologist and frequent collaborator with Ehrlich, who has written and spoken about fossil fuels with enormous influence for nearly 50 years. During the Obama administration, Holdren was the chief science advisor to the president, illustrating his long-standing expert status. James Hansen, arguably the most influential climate scientist ever. Hansen rose to international prominence in 1988 when he testified in front of Congress and declared himself 99% certain about man-made global warming, now more commonly referred to as climate change. Al Gore, the most influential popularizer of catastrophic climate change. While not a scientist himself, Gore has been cited by leading news sources as an accurate vessel about the state of climate science and its implications for policy. He was awarded a Nobel Peace Prize in 2007 for his work warning the world about catastrophic climate change, including the 2006 documentary An Inconvenient Truth, likely the most influential commentary on fossil fuels in the modern era. Bill McKibben, another influential popularizer of catastrophic climate change, whose 1989 book, The End of Nature, won acclaim as the first book on global warming written for a general audience. Called the nation's leading environmentalist, McKibben has led much of the modern anti-fossil fuel movement, including the movement against fossil fuels in the corporate and financial worlds. Michael Mann, a prominent climate scientist who frequently testifies in front of Congress and writes in leading publications about the dangers of catastrophic climate change. Amory Lovins, an energy and environmental theorist who has been designated as a go-to expert by leading news sources for over 40 years and has advised major businesses and governments in more than 65 countries. When studying the work of these designated experts, I have asked the question, do they incorporate into their moral case for eliminating fossil fuels the unique, massive, and desperately needed benefits of fossil fuels? One argument for their position that could acknowledge fossil fuels' benefits would be to acknowledge that fossil fuel elimination policies will be catastrophic, but that they are still needed to avoid an even greater catastrophe from fossil fuel CO2 emissions. This argument would go something like this. The world desperately needs more energy, and only fossil fuels can provide it on a global scale for the foreseeable future. Unfortunately, that energy has the tragic side effect of causing a global climate catastrophe that threatens our existence as a species. Thus, we need to move to rapidly eliminate fossil fuels, even though that will, for the foreseeable future, significantly impoverish the wealthy world and keep the poor world impoverished. Looking in depth at the arguments for fossil fuel elimination made by our designated experts, I have found that they do not concede that the loss of fossil fuels' unique, massive, and desperately needed energy benefits would be catastrophic. Shockingly, they exhibit no concern about the prospect of losing these benefits, including what would happen to the billions of people who currently lack cost-effective energy, or the billions of people who would lose cost-effective energy if fossil fuels were rapidly eliminated without a miraculous alternative. For example, in November 2019, trusted news sources from around the world, including CNN and The Washington Post, reported on an open letter from 11,000 scientists titled World Scientists Warning of a Climate Emergency. It was signed by many prominent scientists including longtime designated expert Paul Ehrlich. As you might expect from the title, the letter was focused on fossil fuels' climate-related side effects, which is certainly an important area of study. But if you read the letter, you will find that there was not one concern expressed about the author's advice to leave remaining stocks of fossil fuels in the ground, and the harm that doing so would cause to billions of people. It wasn't that they acknowledged the life or death value fossil fuels provide and then made a persuasive case that renewables could rapidly replace it. They didn't mention it at all. One particularly egregious dismissal of the benefits of fossil fuels among our designated experts is the common phenomenon of discussing the negative side effects of fossil fuels on food production while ignoring the fact that food production as we know it uses fossil fuels to enormous human benefit. Take the best-selling book, The Madhouse Effect, by climate scientist and designated expert Michael Mann. The book is supposed to be a synthesis of the best expert knowledge about fossil fuels and climate. One of the major topics of the book is the future of food. Mann explains how fossil fuels' side effect of rising CO2 levels will, in his view, do harm to food production. This is certainly a valid area to explore. One also needs to explore any potential benefits of rising CO2 levels, including increased CO2 fertilization. But incredibly, Mann makes no mention of the essential benefit of fossil fuel use to the availability of food. That the availability of food we have today is totally reliant upon low-cost, on-demand, versatile, global-scale fossil fuel energy to power modern agricultural machines with oil and to create modern fertilizers with natural gas. I have found this kind of ignoring of fossil fuels' benefits over and over when I read designated experts' arguments for rapidly eliminating fossil fuel use. I certainly found it in Al Gore's film, An Inconvenient Truth, likely the single most influential piece of content on fossil fuels, which says literally nothing about the life or death benefits of fossil fuels. But I have also found it in the work of the world's leading designated expert on what to do about fossil fuels, the UN IPCC, as represented by its spokespeople. The IPCC's public statements and even its detailed reports ascribe zero or minuscule benefit to fossil fuels. All of this is extremely powerful evidence that our designated experts are indeed engaging in the egregious error of advocating for the elimination of fossil fuels while ignoring their unique, massive, and desperately needed benefits. There is only one way I could imagine that despite all this, they are considering the benefits of fossil fuels. And that is, if they argued that despite fossil fuels' unique cost-effectiveness today, there is some incredible economic breakthrough that makes the benefits of fossil fuels rapidly replaceable in the very near future. This argument would take something like the following form. The ultra-cost-effective energy we get from fossil fuels is unique to fossil fuels, massively beneficial, and desperately needed by billions. Losing this level of energy production, even failing to increase it, would be catastrophic. Fortunately, even though solar and wind are, after 50-plus years on the market, nowhere near a replacement today, economic breakthroughs will enable them to do what fossil fuels do, and on an even larger scale, to the point that China and others will cancel all the coal, oil, and gas projects they have invested in for decades to come. I know this seems impossible, but here's the evidence. Our designated experts do nothing resembling this. Instead of acknowledging the unique cost-effectiveness of fossil fuels today, most designated experts, like the rest of the mainstream knowledge system, deny the reality of alternatives today, claiming that fossil fuels are already being rapidly replaced, including the 100% false claim that 85% fossil fuel China has been rapidly converting to solar and wind. Based on this total misrepresentation of reality, our designated experts glibly assert that fossil fuels can soon be replaced exclusively by green or renewable energy sources, mostly the intermittent solar and wind that provide only 3% of the world's energy and near 0% of certain crucial categories of energy, such as heavy-duty transportation. One particularly striking example to me of denying reality and glibly asserting alternatives was when Al Gore, in an extremely popular 2008 address, claiming to be relying on the best expert knowledge, called to mandate 100% renewable electricity by 2018, meaning that fossil fuels for electricity would be outlawed. He did not engage arguments by energy economists that there was no known way to do this at any cost, let alone low cost. Instead, Gore celebrated the allegedly amazing progress of renewables and said we could end our dependence on oil and use the renewable resources that can give us the equivalent of $1 per gallon gasoline. This was a particularly implausible claim because oil is historically by far the hardest fossil fuel to substitute for, as it has an extremely high energy concentration, energy density, and a convenient, stable liquid form that makes it uniquely suitable for mobility, especially for heavy-duty transportation like airplanes or cargo ships. But Gore gave no substantiation for this claim. Gore's address achieved great acclaim and gained millions of signatures in support of his policy to outlaw all fossil fuel electricity by 2018. Observing our leading designated experts call for the rapid elimination of fossil fuels while ignoring or denying the unique, massive, and desperately needed benefits of fossil fuel energy has convinced me that our knowledge system's expert moral case for eliminating fossil fuels is indeed engaging in a terribly irrational method of evaluation, calling for the elimination of something while ignoring its massive life or death benefits. But it gets worse, because it turns out that our knowledge system doesn't just support the elimination of fossil fuels while ignoring their benefits, it does the same for other vital forms of energy that don't emit CO2. Ignoring the benefits of all cost-effective energy. As disturbing as I found our knowledge system's support of fossil fuel elimination while ignoring fossil fuels' benefits, it has an apparently healthy motivation: the desire to avoid at all costs fossil fuels' CO2 emissions, which our knowledge system says will cause catastrophic or even apocalyptic consequences. But this interpretation is contradicted by the fact that our knowledge system, including our designated experts, regularly supports the elimination of the two most cost-effective, non-CO2-emitting alternatives to fossil fuels. Alternatives you would expect anyone concerned about CO2 to eagerly champion: nuclear energy and hydroelectric energy. Observe that the moral case for eliminating fossil fuels not only ignores the essential, desperately needed, and unique energy benefits of fossil fuels, it usually insists that fossil fuels be replaced with only green or renewable energy, definitions that always exclude nuclear energy and often exclude large-scale hydroelectric energy. This reflects broader support of widespread efforts to reduce or eliminate these sources of energy. Supporting efforts to eliminate cost-effective nuclear energy. Nuclear energy, as I will discuss in more depth in Chapter 6, has demonstrated by far the most potential as an alternative to fossil fuels. Like fossil fuels, it harnesses a naturally stored, concentrated, and abundant form of energy. It has a track record of producing relatively low-cost, extremely reliable electricity around the world. It has even shown promising applications for industrial process heat and heavy-duty transportation. It already powers aircraft carriers, submarines, and giant icebreakers. Nuclear energy emits no CO2, and, as I will elaborate on in later chapters, has by far the best safety track record of any form of energy. Yet, despite the claim that CO2 emissions are the world's biggest problem, and nuclear energy's demonstrated ability to lower them, much of our knowledge system and many of our leading designated experts, such as Amory Lovins and Paul Ehrlich, have fought vehemently to eliminate nuclear energy. Opposition to nuclear energy has been so successful at imposing onerous regulations, project delays, and lawsuits that nuclear energy is declining in the U.S. and threatens to decline around the world. Even where our knowledge system and designated experts aren't leading the charge for nuclear elimination, they exhibit a shocking lack of concern about it. A knowledge system that valued energy but was opposing fossil fuels out of extreme concern about CO2 would perpetually express alarm about what nuclear elimination efforts would mean for those who lack cost-effective energy and for those who have it. And yet we see no such thing. The exception that proves the rule here is designated climate expert James Hansen, who, unlike virtually all other designated experts, discusses the need for energy and strongly advocates for nuclear as an absolutely essential alternative to fossil fuels. Hansen has repeatedly sounded the alarm about the anti-nuclear movement, with very little influence on the broader knowledge system and other designated experts. Our knowledge system is extremely interested in Hansen's warnings about catastrophic climate change and calls to rapidly eliminate fossil fuel use, but not his view that it's insane to do this without avidly supporting nuclear energy. Supporting efforts to eliminate cost-effective hydro energy. Hydroelectric energy is a proven source of low-cost, reliable electricity. As I will discuss in Chapter 6, its growth potential is limited by the number of suitable locations. But there is significant growth potential, and if reducing CO2 emissions were a top priority, one would want to scale up hydro as much as possible. Also, hydro is renewable in the sense that natural sources automatically fill rivers with water over and over. And yet, large-scale hydro, the only significant form of cost-effective hydro, is excluded from most renewable energy policies. Green groups fight to shut down dams, often with the approval of our knowledge system and certainly without the opposition you would expect from a knowledge system that valued energy but was extremely concerned about CO2 emissions. One memorable example of this was when director James Cameron, creator of the 2009 film Avatar, a thinly veiled attack on fossil-fueled civilization and its climate impacts, went to Brazil in 2010 to oppose a large hydroelectric dam. The support by our knowledge system of nuclear and hydro elimination policies without concern for the major CO2-reducing energy benefits that will be lost reveals that our knowledge system has a bigger problem than supporting the elimination of fossil fuels while ignoring their benefits, a problem that cannot be explained by extreme concern about CO2. Even when there is no issue of CO2 emissions, it supports the elimination of other cost-effective forms of energy while ignoring their benefits, suggesting that it does not value cost-effective energy, an essential of human flourishing, at all. Indifference to green opposition to solar and wind. Despite the fact that our knowledge system supports fossil fuel elimination, as well as opposition to nuclear and hydro, one might think that it still does significantly value cost-effective energy. It is just so enthusiastic about the potential of solar and wind, despite their unimpressive current reality. But this is refuted by its indifference to a phenomenon that is making solar and wind replacement of fossil fuels impossible, even if they did magically develop the ability to produce ultra-cost-effective energy. Widespread green opposition to solar and wind. While solar and wind are supported by our knowledge system in theory, in practice they face widespread local opposition because these green, renewable sources of energy involve enormous amounts of mining, take up huge amounts of space that would otherwise be occupied by humans or wildlife, and involve unprecedented amounts of long-distance electric transmission lines. On all these counts, they are facing opposition that makes them even harder to develop, on top of their fundamental problems with cost-effectiveness. In city after city, and nation after nation, mining, land use, and transmission line building is falling far short of targets. And yet, there is no widespread concern by our knowledge system, including designated experts, about this opposition. The fact that mining, construction, and transmission line building for green energy are all being massively slowed, making their proclaimed plans to rapidly replace fossil fuel energy completely impossible, has not deterred them one bit from opposing fossil fuels, nuclear, and hydro energy. Clearly, our knowledge system's support of fossil fuel elimination, while ignoring fossil fuels' unique, massive, and desperately needed benefits, is not an isolated error motivated by extreme concern about CO2. Instead, it is just one example of a knowledge system that opposes cost-effective energy across the board, regardless of CO2 emissions, while consistently ignoring the massive life-or-death benefits of the energy that would be lost to the billions of people who have cost-effective energy and the billions of people who lack it. Since there is no way that our knowledge system can be genuinely ignorant to this degree of energy's value, what must be operating is some kind of systemic hostility to cost-effective energy as such. There is something about cost-effective energy that leads our knowledge system to consistently regard its massive benefits to human flourishing as unimportant by comparison. I will explain what I think that something is in Chapter 3. Ignoring energy experts. Further evidence that our knowledge system is hostile to cost-effective energy as such is the types of people it designates as experts. Observe that our leading designated experts on what to do about fossil fuels are almost exclusively people who are experts not on energy, but rather on energy's negative environmental side effects, so-called environmental experts. I say so-called environmental experts because, as I will elaborate in the next chapter, I don't consider someone an environmental expert unless they acknowledge the massive environment-improving benefits of cost-effective energy, which our designated environmental experts do not. Consider the wildly popular refrain to listen to the scientists or listen to the climate scientists when it comes to fossil fuel policy. This means listen to the designated experts on the negative side effects of fossil fuels. What about experts on the massive life-or-death benefits of fossil fuels? Those experts don't matter, because to our knowledge system, cost-effective energy doesn't matter, only its negative side effects matter. I experienced this firsthand when I testified in front of the Senate Committee on Environment and Public Works in 2016, when Barbara Boxer acted as if I had no relevance to the hearing. Senator Barbara Boxer: Mr. Epstein, are you a scientist? Alex Epstein: No, philosopher. Senator Barbara Boxer: You're a philosopher? Alex Epstein: Yes. Senator Barbara Boxer: Okay, well, this is the Senate Environment and Public Works Committee. I think it's interesting we have a philosopher here talking about an issue. Alex Epstein: It's to teach you how to think more clearly. Note Barbara Boxer's question to me: Mr. Epstein, are you a scientist? The hearing was about energy policy, and while in my answer to her question I emphasized that I was a philosopher and therefore an expert in thinking methods, I had been brought in as a widely regarded energy expert who had written one of the most influential and best-selling energy books of the decade. And yet to Boxer, energy expertise was meaningless. All we needed to do was listen to experts on fossil fuels' negative environmental side effects. A knowledge system that systematically ignores the benefits of cost-effective energy to the point that it can always find a reason to oppose it, and that ignores energy expertise, is a broken and dangerous knowledge system that could lead us toward some truly terrible decisions. A broken knowledge system. Let's recap. At first, when we hear that the experts have concluded that we must rapidly eliminate fossil fuels, that seems extremely compelling and trustworthy. Yet once we see that the mainstream knowledge system telling us that conclusion supports energy elimination policies not just for fossil fuels, but also for non-CO2-emitting nuclear and hydro, while being indifferent to the green opposition to its supposedly beloved solar and wind, and with no concern for the billions who lack cost-effective energy and the billions who could lose it, it is clear that what we are told the experts think is very wrong. Not because all researchers are wrong, far from it, but because the people our knowledge system is designating as experts, along with the knowledge system itself, are engaging in an indefensible method of evaluation, calling for the elimination of something based on its side effects without considering its massive life or death benefits. Let me be clear. We absolutely need to study and consider the negative side effects attributed to fossil fuels, such as increased heat waves, droughts, wildfires, etc. Just as it is completely wrong of our knowledge system to ignore fossil fuels' benefits, it would also be completely wrong of me or anyone else to ignore fossil fuels' side effects, especially their side effects of greatest concern, CO2 emissions. We cannot make good policy decisions about these side effects if we don't know the benefits that will be lost in trying to avoid them. Benefits such as affordable food, clothing, shelter, and medical care that ultra-cost-effective energy from fossil fuels make possible. A knowledge system that advocates eliminating cost-effective sources of energy by focusing exclusively on their side effects while ignoring their benefits is a broken knowledge system, even if it is right about their side effects. Just as a knowledge system that advocates for the elimination of vaccines and antibiotics on the basis of their side effects while ignoring the profound benefits of inoculating and curing disease is a broken knowledge system for evaluating vaccines and antibiotics, even if it gets the side effects right. Which raises the question, if our knowledge system is so wrong about the benefits of fossil fuels, could it also be significantly wrong about the allegedly catastrophic climate side effects of fossil fuels? While this may seem hard to believe, we already have at least two reasons to suspect that it might be. One, our knowledge system might be dramatically underestimating our ability to use cost-effective energy from fossil fuels to cope with its climate side effects. Two, our knowledge system's apparent hostility toward cost-effective energy could drive it to overstate fossil fuels' negative side effects. Our knowledge system might be dramatically underestimating our ability to use cost-effective energy from fossil fuels to cope with its climate side effects. Cost-effective energy gives us the ability to use machines to improve our lives in every area of life. That includes protection from climate. While, as I have said, we absolutely need to study and consider the negative side effects attributed to fossil fuels, we also need to recognize that cost-effective energy from fossil fuels has the potential to at least significantly neutralize those side effects. Fossil fuels can be used to build insulated, heat-resistant buildings, to power air conditioners, to power drought-fighting irrigation systems, to clear brush and build barriers to fight wildfires, etc. If our knowledge system is ignoring the benefits of fossil fuels in general, that may well mean it is ignoring the significant benefits of fossil fuels in protecting ourselves from climate danger, whether natural or man-made, which could lead it to dramatically overestimate the negative consequences of fossil fuels' climate impacts. Our knowledge system's apparent hostility toward cost-effective energy could be driving it to overstate fossil fuels' negative side effects. In general, when people oppose something without acknowledging its benefits, that reflects a hostility that causes them to overstate the negatives of what they oppose. For example, when critics of vaccination practices do not acknowledge the lives saved by vaccines and focus only on allegedly terrible side effects, I am suspicious of their account of the side effects. The same suspicion is warranted of a knowledge system that ignores the massive life or death benefits of fossil fuels and focuses only on allegedly terrible side effects, especially when we know that it also opposes nuclear and hydro while being unconcerned about the opposition to solar and wind that is making its proclaimed solar and wind plans impossible. Whatever underlying hostility toward cost-effective energy is driving our knowledge system to consistently support its elimination while ignoring its benefits could very easily be causing our knowledge system to overstate fossil fuels' negative side effects, including its climate side effects. But could it really be as wrong as I claimed at the outset of this book? So wrong that we should actually be using more fossil fuels and that you should become an advocate for fossil fuels? That still may seem crazy. But after what I share with you in the next chapter, it may not. Because not only does our knowledge system ignore the massive life or death benefits of cost-effective energy, it has a 50-year track record of catastrophizing its side effects by, among other vices, miscommunicating the state of the relevant science.